From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. That was Joe Morgan, Sidewinder. And, well, I was glad to hear at the end of Amy's show they were talking, Amy Goodman, she was talking about the roundups in California of people that Trump puts labels on and then arrests. It's a very dangerous situation. We've talked about it on this show. I followed that story as well, and they've actually gone into the fields of what they call the Central Valleys. I call it the San Joaquin, but the South San Joaquin. They've gone into the fields, and of course what is happening is that workers are being alerted that the personnel of this thing called ICE are on their way or in the area, and nobody shows up, which, lo and behold, turns out the California farmers, they don't like that. California farmers have been passing out cards, little red cards, to their workers, and they give them instructions on how to avoid the authorities, the federal authorities, the feds, as it used to be said. It's one thing they have trouble locally, but if they say the feds, that's big stuff. But what it is leading to is a really serious confrontation between segments of the country, but also segments of the economy. The San Joaquin is an agricultural powerhouse, but it is not if it doesn't have the workers, and most of the workers are Latino, Mexican-Americans, citizens, and those who have come there to work. And it's really quite striking. It's a great labor story, which needs to be looked at because it's been since the time of Tom Joad in the Grapes of Wrath, you can follow it. Those who produce the fantastic wealth from the agriculture of California, they had many names, but it used to be called migrant labor, where people worked from crops to crops. Again, if you read John Steinbeck, you'll see the story. I do recommend, by the way, this would be the time to read The Grapes of Wrath. although to talk about the evolution of the problem as it is now being lived, it was in the time of Franklin Roosevelt and World War II that California became very dependent on labor from Mexico because of the war and shortage of personnel. They actually, I know for a fact that they had German POWs picking peaches and oranges in Kern County at one point during the war. So it's a story to watch because it's Trump may get his way, but he's going to actually have to tear the place up, and it's not going to end happily for the American economy and for agriculture in California. If this keeps up, it is quite striking, isn't it, that the farmers, most of them, we call them corporate farms now, passing out information to their employees on how to avoid the police. somebody might call that pre-revolutionary conditions. Quite striking. Just think about it. There's been a an article in the New York Times about 1 week ago. You can find it, an in-depth story, and somewhat messy and misreported. I used to work there, so I know some things about it. But one of the foolish moments in the story was that the reporter decided he would tell that there are farm workers who can make as much as $44 an hour. And so, of course, people, letter writers, commented, my goodness, well, why wouldn't everybody be out there working for $44 an hour? And then somebody explained, he didn't get it quite precisely stated. It didn't mean an hour. He meant in an hour, someone who's doing piecework, who's very skilled, and who is willing to throw their body at it for 10 hours a day, or how many hours, in 100-degree heat. Somebody, they might make that piecework in a particular crop. But when the crop is harvested, that skill won't be needed for another year. And they, so about one-third of the intellectual capacity of the readers of the Times who commented went into discussing, oh my goodness, they can make all that money. It's completely absurd. The season lasts about a month, maybe 6 weeks. And in the old days, you would then pack up. And if you were, you know, you can listen to Merle Haggard. He tells the story very well. You head off to the next crop. There's a great song. Actually, to kind of capture it, if you want to hear a song sometime, it's a Two Larry Dust by Merle Haggard. Merle's father was a real worker. And I used to kind of feel sorry for him until I realized his father was making more money than mine. But Two Larry Dust. Maybe we'll play it later in the show. We'll see. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. At about 11:30, we are going to be speaking to Michael Link, who is a former UN rapporteur on the human rights and circumstances and living conditions of the Palestinians, and has an established international reputation as an authority. The position he occupied is now has become a highly controversial post. It's not controversial for anybody except the Trump administration, who's decided to wage war on that. On that office. But we're going to talk to Michael Link about the latest news from Gaza. I can tell you the principal question on my mind is how it came to pass that the UN, which was responsible for providing food, relief, medicine for Gaza for years, an established institution, doesn't appear to be in the picture anymore, and I want to know why, and we hope Michael Link can help us out. I know he can. There is a story I'm sure you're following or heard about, and that is that, there's two. Let's put the two pieces together. Mr. Carney, who they say is a liberal, has agreed practically at the snap of a finger from Washington that, yes, we will move our military budget from something short of 2% to the national. Okay, I'll just save the language for later, but at any rate, move our budget expenditure to 5%, which is really a leap. And of course, everyone looks at each other and says, where will that come from? And by the way, why are we doing it? And it's part of the general issue of humiliation of Canada at the moment by the Trump administration. We're not alone, of course. Trump is only happy when he sees he's humiliated somebody. He's busy at the moment trying to humiliate, and quite successfully, the Europeans. according to today's news. So he's at the moment focused on that. But this matter of the military is really, this is a time, I would say, for serious reflection. I say that because there isn't any, because every editorial writer says, well, of course, we, given the new threats in the world, and we need to be prepared, and we have to do our part. They've become unmoored from the question of, well, who's the enemy? Because the only state that's threatening Canada is the neighbor with the longest now protected border. And that is the actual threat, as every Canadian actually knows. You can tell by their spending habits and by their travel habits. But if you ask Mr. Carney, and actually I suppose the NDP and the Conservatives and everybody, including the Bloc, we have to be preparing for Russia, which doesn't, as far as I can make out, is not particularly interested in us, never has been. We've been interested in them. The Canadian Army went to Russia to attempt to restore the Tsar after World War I. And then there's China. And it's part of the joke is that Trump kicks Canada, mocks Canada, goes through this whole show, and the result is that Canada says it's going to double its military spending to be ready to somehow deal with China, which a country, by the way, just to, in case Ottawa doesn't know it, 1 billion population, a very rapidly developing economy. It has multiple nuclear weapons. It has all those things that mark you as a great power, as aircraft carriers, submarines, top-of-the-line fighter aircraft, missiles. And so we double our economy because we're going to do what with them? And by the way, the only way we would ever be involved is if the U.S. is involved, because the military profile of Canada is locked into the U.S. There's no getting around it. And if there's any fairy tale about becoming locked in with the Europeans, you can forget it. The weapons are chosen and developed and purchased from the Americans. Donald Trump just told the world, just for the fun of it, he says, well, we're going to provide weapons now for Ukraine, and the Europeans will pay for that. So will Canada, by the way. So we have never had, as far as I know, in modern history, a debate over whether any of this is necessary and why we would be going forward with it. There's going to be some political campaigns shortly to choose new leaders in the NDP. The Conservative Party stuck with the one they've got. There should be a clear challenge to Ottawa to define adversary. In what way is China an adversary other than ideological rhetoric? They are a trading partner, a large trading partner. There's mutual benefit. And this idea of turning what is a benefit into a possible problem is very destructive of the interests of the Canadian people. I would put that as a debater's argument if somebody wants to do it. So we're in a situation where we're a vassal, acting like a vassal, despite the fact we seem to be rather underappreciated in Washington. So But that brings me to another matter, which is the headlines that last week were that a platoon, some guys in the Canadian Army, got a hold of some really sophisticated equipment, which they weren't authorized to be playing with, and had appropriated it, and were planning some kind of military action in, of all places, Quebec. I don't know and don't need to summarize the details other than to say that it also involved what is, they're telling us is right-wing ideology. If you want to know what that translates, it is white supremacist thinking. It is fascist thinking. And I don't see a hue and cry about this of the sort that it ought to be raised. But the most striking part of it for me in trying to follow the story is that once again, they're saying, well, we seem to have a problem with white supremacists or people with fascist neo-Nazi ideas making up a portion of the Canadian military. And immediately we're told by right-wing conservative or whatever, oh, well, it's a bunch of bad apples, some bad apples. And every outfit has bad apples. Well, actually, in fact, this is a continuing problem. And I want to cite a case, and everyone should be reminded of it. It was called the Somalia Affair, and it was 1993. And it was the Canadian Airborne Regiment sent to Somalia by Prime Minister Mulroney. And by the way, it was called a peacekeeping mission. That was how it set out. They left Canada, Canada the do-gooder, and it's going to be a peacekeeping mission. The overall power in the region was the U.S., who, by the way, they also stumbled badly in Somalia. You can look it up. I'll just tell you the name of the individual. There was a boy, a 16-year-old boy, who was Shadane Aron. His name was Shadane Aron. 16. He was tortured to death by members of the Canadian Airborne Regiment, 1993. That's quite a while ago, 1993. And what do you know? When they looked into it, they found that they had, you can find pictures. You want to look at pictures? There's pictures of members of that unit with swastikas on their shirts, photographs of Hitler, a Confederate flag was flown in the units in one, I think they were called Commando 2. And I love the story. Love it. I like noting that they said they got that Confederate flag from an American unit that they were doing some sort of common exercise with. So the Americans gave them a Confederate flag. Isn't that great? The Americans would give their Canadian pals a flag of a rebellion against the United States of slave owners, and they called it the rebel flag, and so there they were, and they were it was investigated. A couple of generals got moved around. A couple of officers got little notes on their reports, but they convicted two of the lowest-ranking guys. But, of course, the lowest-ranking guys had done it. One of them, after the story got out, it was an accident that the story got out, by the way. There happened to be a Canadian journalist there at the time, and he heard about there was some shooting. The shooting had been authorized by some commander who the issue was that they said they had looters. What they were people trying to steal food or steal things that might be valuable to them from an army camp, which is not unheard of anywhere in the world. That's why you have guard duty. A second thing you have usually is somebody who finds out there's such a thing as a black market and goes into business for himself. And that could be on either side of the ledger, not that of the Somalis. It could be on both sides because there's money to be made. But the officers, I guess, because standing around in the hot sun, wanting to give orders, wanted to be in authority, decided that they needed to be more punitive. And so they gave shotguns to some of these guys on guard duty. Then they gave them the authority to fire directly, live fire directly at what would be a thief or a civilian. And the way they rationalized it, I want to show you how dirty, this is what they call mission creep. They decided that since they were in their compound, there were material that was being used by the Americans for their military operation in Somalia, helicopter operations, then that would mean that that it could be defined not as a simple theft, but as sabotage, some attempt to undermine the military effort. So by that little juggling of details and irresponsible forward thinking by officers, they created a situation where you could start to kill people. And they did. And they set a trap. They caught Mr. Arone in a trap. 16, I shouldn't call him Mr. Easy Boy. They caught a couple of others. They beat them. The reports are all there. They beat them. In one case, a warrant officer, according to the reports, was kicking a Somali that they had captured. And you have to understand, the reason I raise this is that people talk, you build armies. Armies are extremely dangerous, even to themselves. But the worst thing that happens in any military is loss of morale. That's why they have a morale officer, at least they did when I was there. And they're supposed to know what the thinking and the mood and attitude of their troops are, and they're supposed to keep them in line. And that might require re-education or removal. One of the things that came out in the hearing was that when they put together the unit to go to Somalia, the army's full of politics and rivalries. So there were some officers didn't like the they didn't get promoted, I guess. So they asked them to turn over, provide some members of their units. And one officer said that what they did was they put all the bad apples that they had into that operation to get rid of them, to send them to Somalia. So we look into the, it's called a Somalia affair. And 1993, Shidane, if I pronounce it right, Arone, 16, tortured to death. When I say tortured to death, they found on his body, after he had received many, many beatings, they found he had been burned with a cigarette, various parts of his body. And so there's no mistaking what it was. Of course, there's a very famous photograph, I'll never forget it, of the poor child with his mouth open and a baton, military baton in his teeth, and a grinning corporal behind him. That same corporal also put a gun to this 16-year-old's head while he was still conscious. He didn't pull the trigger. There was a trial, and two were convicted. One of them, I shouldn't say he was convicted. He hanged himself. He didn't die, but he damaged. He had what they said was brain damage. And he survived that but didn't go to trial. A second soldier did. So here we are. They're telling you the story. Now it's 2025. Now we have another outfit. and you find the same profile. So you better ask, if you're going to build an army, what kind of army are you building? And what is the ideology that's governing all this? Because they seem to be thinking, these people that to whom you're giving the latest in weapons and all this equipment to lethal equipment, they seem to be thinking that it's cool to be to have a swastika or to be a Klan member and to pass around, as in the case in 1993, they were passing around Klan literature. They tried to pin it on one guy, and the best defense that they came up with, the group, the people who were charged, they said, oh, no, it couldn't have been him because we were all reading it. So the fact that they were all reading it, that they were all passing around Klan material, that took care of the problem, according to them. So the question about forming armies, the crucial thing is to do what? And if you define the enemy the way that currently the U.S. and Canada and others do, you say that the enemy is communist China, and then you treat Mr. Putin as though he's a communist. Americans don't know the difference. They say, well, Putin's a Bolshevik because, you know, sometimes he's Ivan the Terrible, sometimes he's Stalin. But you see, what happens in the ranks, and I've been in the ranks, is that they just throw out the small-time stuff and go right to the heart of it. So who's the one who really took on the Bolsheviks? Well, that was a famous German. And he really, you know, went for the whole thing. And he had created death's heads and all this morbid stuff. German fascism was extremely morbid. And same with the Spanish. You all remember Franco's general who said that when he hears the word culture, he reaches for his revolver. We're currently led by people who think like that, evidence being that they're going to have a wrestling match at the White House and next year to celebrate America's 250th anniversary. I can't remember whether Trump prefers people tearing each other's face off or whether he likes fat guys in tights who jump off ropes. But it's a kind of pretend world, but it's extremely morbid. So the theme would go, let's go back to saying 1993, now it's 2025. Once again, the presence of white supremacist fascist ideology amongst members of the army. And you know that they had to completely undo the Canadian Airborne Regiment because they said it couldn't be salvaged. That's how bad the situation was. And you should know, too, that most politicians and most editorial writers tried to slough it off. And they all said, well, basically the idea was boys will be boys. Kim Campbell was running for leadership of the Conservative Party at the time, and she said, oh, these things are common. Oh, are they? Why isn't it common to throw them all out of the army? All of them. And why not a recruitment system that tracks those who come in and says this will not be tolerated? If you have a unit that's flying the Confederate flag, everybody in the unit, starting with a commanding officer, should be out immediately. If you don't, the ailment will spread, believe me. We have a song, Kurt Vile and Bertolt Brecht, I think, put it together, called something about Let's Join the Army. We'll play that. We're going to come back and we will be talking to Michael Link.